Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Songwriter Connection, the podcast that delves deep into the art and heart of songwriting. Each week, we gather around the dining room table to uncover the stories behind the songs. We invite you to join us on a journey to the creative minds of the songwriters who shape the melodies of our lives. From Nashville, Tennessee, here's your host, Dave Lenihan.
So glad that you've joined us, and thank you for pushing us ever closer to that 3 million stream mark, and we certainly appreciate it. It's above and beyond what we ever dreamed about when we started in January of 2021. Today, I've got such an amazing guest that I'm just so honored to introduce you to on the phone. You're Hendersonville, right, Tennessee?
Well, I was. Yes, our recording studio is in Hendersonville, Tennessee. I live in Bellevue, Tennessee
now. Okay. West Side, okay. West Side.
I lived in Hendersonville for about 10 years,
okay.
I would say.
Okay. It's Anna Christina Cash, by the way. Anna, it's so nice for you to join us. I really appreciate you taking time to pick up the phone and call us. It's really nice to talk to you and to meet you.
Well, nice to meet you as well. Thanks for taking the time to interview me.
It's my pleasure. I want to tell folks a little bit about you. You started your musical career at the age of six. Six.
And yes.
And I should tell you, folks, that you grew up in Miami.
I did.
Mom and Dad came here from Cuba as the revolution was going on. So you grew up in Miami with a wide variety of musical influences. At six, and I wish I could speak Spanish, so just forgive me. It's Sábado Gigante. Is that right?
Sábado Gigante. That's really good.
Oh, wow.
That translates to Giant Saturday, and it's a big variety show. Or was, you know, they've been canceled now. It's the longest running variety show in the history of television, actually, at one point. And there's a rumor that they're trying to bring it back again.
Wow. That would be great. Would you go back?
I sure would. I have a lot of old footage they can share.
Then by the age of 15, you're recording with Sony Latin here in Nashville, and you're releasing records, and your career just keeps on growing. And what I love about you is not only do you keep the legacy of the family alive, Johnny and June, but you stay true to your roots, and you've really created your own niche, which we talk about in this podcast all the time. Be you, right? And that's who you are.
Yes. Definitely. I can't be anyone else like either of us. You know, we're all individuals for sure. And I have my own way of doing things and my own artistry for sure. But I do love to honor family as well. So it's a fine balance.
That's awesome. Now your songs and your songwriting and vocals have appeared on music by T-Bone Burnett, Natalie Cole, Brad Paisley, Johnny Cash, the Carter Family, Los Tigres del Norte. Is that how you say that?
Los Tigres del Norte. That translates to Tigers of the North. I'm going to do all the translations.
Yeah. You translated Folsom Prison Blues for them to sing, huh?
I sure did. And the album of the same title won a Grammy for Best Norteño Record at the Grammys.
Wow.
And it was amazing to work with them. They're the sweetest people. They're actually from the U.S. They're from California. So they're from, you know, just Northern California area, and they're legends. They're like the Beatles in their kind of genre of music. Yeah.
That's an interesting comparison. Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
You know, and you've performed everywhere. Bluebird Cafe, the Grand Ole Opry. You're a veteran of the Opry. You, in fact, you're just there back in June, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. The Country Music Hall of Fame, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where my nephew works, Madison Square Garden, major sporting events. You do the national anthem at different places. And so you've done a lot. And it's so, like I said, we're so honored to have you.
Oh, thank you. You know, I just really love what I do. I love my job. I don't get tired of it. And I kind of love to be creative and stay creative. And it's definitely come and gone in spurts. But in the last 3 years or so, I felt like a sudden surge in energy as far as like writing, recording, and promoting music. And I'm having a great time.
I've heard it read that, about you, that how important music was as a part of your life, and you never felt alone because you always had your music with you. So
sure,
songwriting,
yeah.
it helped to define, well, it helps you express your soul, isn't it?
Very much so. You know, my parents are kind of quiet. Well, not as much my mom, don't tell her. My mom is pretty much, she's kind of out there, but like my father was always very quiet, man. And, you know, just had a very normal family, but I always had an inclination towards the artistic life, essentially. And I always felt a little different. I always felt a little awkward when I was younger. And to kind of express my feelings or express myself, express how I was feeling, I started journaling. I started writing poetry. I figured that I'd love to do that. I figured out that I could sing when I was really young, of course, when I auditioned for Sabado Gigante and before that and all of that. And I was so active already as it was with music. So I just started, you know, putting music to the words and, you know, learning guitar, learning piano. And it still is, you know, writing songs is almost like a fun game to me. It's like figuring something out, basically. Oh, and that was not there before. And every time I just get done with one, it feels like a sense of accomplishment. It feels like, you know, someone either thinks it's a fun song or something that they can relate to that they've gone through in their own lives. And I find that work very rewarding.
That's amazing. Do you know, I love that. And I feel exactly the same way. It's like working on a puzzle or something. And it just seems to come in, and then you have this part here and that and there, and it's fun work, isn't it?
It is. It really is. It's like a puzzle. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So, so much a part. When did you start writing songs? Cause you were singing from the age of six.
Writing songs a little later, I was dabbling in it when I was about 13, but 14, I started really trying to piece things together. Now, a lot of my earlier stuff, it just wasn't, you know, the structure wasn't quite there. I was kind of like learning the craft, you know, but over time you get better and better, just like when you practice an instrument, just like when you practice singing. Yeah. So my songs just started becoming more and more cohesive as I grew older, for sure. And, you know, kind of like the more commercial sound that I have now is thanks to years of crafting all of that.
And I love that. And I love how you found your own niche. I mean, you grew up listening to Latin music, but also pop music and country. You liked country. You mix all that together along with a little jazz and the Latin beats, and you've got what you do. And that is absolutely amazing.
Thank you. It's really fun because I grew up in South Florida, as you know, in Miami, and there's a lot of Latin culture there. And of course, not only my own background, but I grew up around friends that were Venezuelan, Colombian, Argentine, like all kinds of people. And essentially there's a lot of celebration. There was always an excuse to celebrate or whether it was whatever occasion it was. And then just, I fell in love with country artists early in my life, like Patsy Cline, like Loretta Lynn.
Yeah.
And, you know, Leanne was a very big influence on me when I was a kid in the 90s, Leanne Rimes, as well as what was happening with the, you know, the crossover into country and pop, like Shania and Faith, but then there was Martina. So I already had an ear for country music early on, and there was a station called 999 Kiss Country. That's an Odyssey station. And I listened to that all the time, and I'm like, wow, these are some of the best voices I've ever heard. These are some of the best story songs I've ever heard. And that, in combination with some of the rhythm, some of, you know, just of the Latin music, and also not only that, but like making songs that are true to country, like very country purists, a lot of these, you know, like they sound country, but then bringing it to another audience that may not understand English, like when I do the Spanish translations and bringing that to the Latin audience, bringing country music to them, you know.
Now, so I wanted to ask you there about that. How difficult is that to, you know, because I just speak one language and you're bilingual, I know, but is it hard to translate to different language? Is it hard to stay true to the song? I mean, you really have to, you know, think about rhymes and things. How difficult is that?
Well, to me, it's funny you ask that because it is hard. I always tell people it's easier to write a new song from scratch than to translate a song from one language to the other. Mm-hmm. Some of them just don't work, honestly. So I have to kind of judge them on a case-by-case basis because I don't like to force things. So if something works effortlessly that I feel can be translated and you can kind of tell the same story, you cannot do it literally. You can't do a literal translation. So nobody can just go to Google Translate and translate something because it won't make sense.
No.
But you have to find your way around it and say many of the same things that get to the same conclusion in the other language. So it's definitely challenging.
I'll bet.
Sometimes when we've gotten stuck, we've done a Spanglish version instead of a whole Spanish version. Because if there's a phrase, for example, I did not actually work on the Spanish translation with Cheap Margaritas, but Erica Ender did. Mm-hmm. And she could not find, well, the phrase for Cheap Margaritas is Margaritas Baratas, and it did not fit within the rhyme meter, nor did it make any sense to translate that.
Yeah.
So when we did the Spanglish version, we kept Cheap Margaritas, and then all the verses were in Spanish. The chorus was in Spanish, but the phrase Cheap Margaritas was just the English, really. So that's what the creation of the Spanglish.
So when you say Spanglish, it's a mixture of both languages. So
yes, okay. Yes. So Spanglish, for those that don't know, I grew up around a lot of Spanglish because there were Spanish-speaking citizens in Miami, as well as people that spoke English all the time in their jobs and in their schools and work. And Spanglish happens when you can't find a certain word for one language or the other, and you end up speaking a hybrid of both languages, which happens so often where I'm from, actually, so yeah. Common where I'm from. Actually, the National Languages, the Society of Languages or something of linguists actually recognize Spanglish now as a dialect.
Do they?
From Miami.
Wow.
They officially recognize it as a dialect.
How about that? The blending of the two. I love that.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. Can you give us an example of, like, I think about Folsom Prison Blues. So there's a story behind that. Can you tell us maybe an example of the challenge of translating that to Spanish? Was there a change that had to happen? Maybe just a little example in that translation.
So el tren viene llegando. Mm-hmm. Ya lo puedo escuchar. Right there. The train is coming. I could hear it now instead of I hear the train coming. I was rolling around the bend. There was no way to say rolling around the bend, right?
No. So what do you say?
Because that is a figure of speech in English that does not translate to, so essentially I did, and there was another challenge. Los Tigres del Norte, they're Mexican-Americans, you know, so they're Mexican Mexicans have a different slang than the slang I grew up with, being surrounded by people. So I had a co-writer for that who was, of the group and everything. And he helped with certain things that were slang, like different words that were slang. And I don't have the lyrics in front of me to say what now, but there are a few words here and there that I didn't grow up with that, you know, it's just like street words and things like that.
I find that so fascinating, and languages have always fascinated me. And I was reading.
Oh, me too.
You studied writing and English at Harvard. Did I see Harvard grad?
Yes, sir.
We have a Harvard grad on the show today. That's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that, but my husband will make fun of me because I don't know how to open a can of food sometimes. So with a can opener.
So. I doubt that because I've seen some of your videos on YouTube in the kitchen with Anna. Oh, man. Those are awesome. In fact, you had me at ricotta lemon pancakes.
Pancakes. Oh, those are good.
Oh, man. Those sound good. Yeah, I got to try
that. Now, I should make those. My daughter, she's 8 now, Grace, and she loves everything that has to do with lemon. So she will choose a lemon cake or a lemon dessert over like another kid that would like have chocolate or vanilla or strawberry. Like she's lemon all the way.
Wow.
And it's been a while since I've made those for her. So I'll have to make those lemon ricotta pancakes for her because she's lemon. all the way.
Okay, I'll be there. Okay. They have two children, James and Grace, right?
Yes, two I have James and Grace.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it tough to mix the the music business with the family life? I imagine that's a challenge.
It's a huge balance, I have to say, because and it's rewarding at the same time because I'm so grateful for my family. I'm so grateful for my kids, my husband. But just like maintaining a house and just maintaining a marriage and being a mom, and it's like the safety, it's the making sure they're fed, making sure they're doing their activities, that they're learning, that they're doing their homework. Mm-hmm. And then also balancing the shows we have, because like sometimes John and I will have to travel separately, but a lot of times we'll get booked together. And when we get booked together, that's where the challenge presents itself with the school. So it will have to be in the care of trusted people. But the everyday work-life balance is challenging for sure. Or I'll do one of these phoners or an interview, and then my son will be screaming in the background. So it's good that you got me at this time and not in the afternoon. So he's out right now in school, but
all right.
Preschool.
Thankful for that. And I should tell listeners that your husband is John Carter Cash, the only son of Johnny and June. And mm-hmm. and you, did I read that you met in Los Angeles and you didn't really know who he was at the time?
No, sir. No, I did not. And he didn't know I was a singer. We were just talking. It was really happenstance. And so many people meet online and things these days. It's like, that's so alien to me, actually, because we truly met the old school way.
Did you?
I was in Los Angeles from, I'll tell you the whole story. From 2010 to 2014, I lived in Los Angeles. John and I met in 2013 at the Sunset Marquee Hotel. I lived right down the street. And for those that don't know, the Sunset Marquee Hotel is like a music spot, really. A lot of musicians either stay at that hotel or, you know, it has like a bar, restaurant, and everything. And after I'd finished working, I went in for a glass of wine, and he and his friend Garrett were there, like two bar stools down. And then he sat next to me and started talking to me. And we ended up talking about all sorts of life things, philosophy, everything, but never was there a mention about music industry necessarily, you know, in those conversations at the beginning. And then later, you know, like we kind of gave each other the background of who we were and everything. And he reached out like 9 months later to ask me out to dinner. Like he visited Los Angeles again, but we did not date right away. It took 9 months for him to ask me out on a date when he came back.
Fast worker,
we just hit it off from there.
Yeah. Wow. 9 months. Well, that's good. So you were friends before anything else. You know, I think that's awesome.
We were friends, and we're still friends to this day. You know, we just get along and we understand each other, which I think is interesting. And even though it may seem like we grew up in very different ways, like the way we are isn't very different. You know, it's funny. We're a lot alike in many ways, and I find that interesting.
Yeah, I do too. Good for you. what was it like to record your recordings now at the cabin that Johnny built and John Carter Cash produced? Tell me about that feeling. I mean, is one of those when you walk in there, the hair on the back of your neck sticks up a little bit, knowing the history and everything?
Most certainly, especially. You know, the kitchen area was the original area. It was just the kitchen. Like the studio was built out later. All of the control room was built later in the early 2000s after his parents had passed and everything. You know, so mainly in that kitchen area, that's where the real old spirit of the cabin is, I would say. His dad did not do a lot of recordings there. He would just kind of go there to write or kind of get away from the house that was on the lake and everything. And he did some recording, but not like huge amount. You know, and I think that what people get confused about is they think the studio was always a studio, but it just got built on in the early 2000s. But that kitchen is the original part of it. And, you know, June had the fabric for the curtains put in, and it's very charming and very old world, really. Yeah. It's a log, like a log cabin, wooden cabin.
That's great. And unfortunately, the house was destroyed by fire. Early 2000s, and it's not there, but you can get a feel for it if you visit the Johnny Cash Museum, which I always tell my listeners on radio and on this podcast, it's one of the best museums. In fact, I think it's like four in the world right now, or at least the United States. It's a great museum, and they have the whole wall right from the fireplace there and pictures that you can look through. It's really stunning. It's a shame.
Yeah. So I did want to mention it is actually in the U.S. It's the number one
museum in the country.
Like, is it now number one? Wow.
Yeah. It's great. It's been for years in a row. It's one best museum in the country, above the Smithsonian, above anything. And awesome. In the world, it might be four, but I believe for several years now consecutively, it's number one.
It's great. And it's just a great, it's one of the things when you come to Nashville, put that on your list. You really have to visit. It's a great museum. And Christina, I want to talk about your song, Florida Girl. You grew up in Florida, mm-hmm. and this is an amazing song. And I think a good example of the Anna Christina sound. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about the writing of that. I know the whole second half has to do with your grandma, right?
Yeah. Yes, my grandma.
Which is so cool.
So Florida Girl, essentially when I was writing the song, I wrote it with Willie Breeding. Willie is the co-producer of the entire project with John. They both co-produced it together.
Okay.
And I kind of had a nostalgia for Florida. I wanted to kind of go back to my roots and talk about my childhood. And so there are very visual images also of Florida, just like the breezes, the palm trees, the first house I ever grew up in had orange trees, and we used to feed the little birds in the nest with my mom. So like all of those core memories that are so simple, so natural, kind of unspoiled, like when you're a child, essentially. And as we grow, we become busier. We carry more responsibility. So, you know, that time in my life is what I wanted to capture. And the second verse is about my grandma. Both of my grandma's mothers are now not with us, but that grandmother, my paternal grandmother, Maria Dolores was her name. In particular, the ice cream truck used to come to her neighborhood. I used to hear the chime and everything. So like the whole verse is about that feeling about trying to run out to get to the ice cream truck. And just something so innocent, so pure that, not that I took for granted back then, but my grandma's no longer here, you know, so, and that house was sold. And I just remember the way everything was at that time. And I always tell people the ice cream truck did not come to my neighborhood where my parents and I live. So I would try to stay at her house all the time. So it's these things that as life progresses and passes you by, you can't get those moments back. So I wanted to capture a simple visual of something like that in a song.
The ice cream truck. What a memory, you know, and even in my childhood, we don't see him much today, but when I do, I'm out there like, come here, what you got? Well, you know,
I heard one in Nashville the other day. I was really surprised. And like, I will chase one down if I hear it. I missed it.
Me too.
I was like, I have a thing for ice cream trucks. Clearly.
What's your favorite flavor? What do you like?
Oh, you know, I'm really boring. I've always been a vanilla person. But back in the day, what I used to order with my grandma, I used to get all the bad, like the crazy dyes. Like there was this vampire popsicle I used to get that it was like purple on the outside and you'd bite into it and it'd be blood red. It was weird.
But
it was
Halloween
time. it was loaded with food coloring and just probably terrible stuff, honestly.
That's something. How old were you before you saw snow growing up in Miami, you know? And I asked that from a former, I was born in Buffalo, New York, and I grew up in Cleveland, as we know from snow. Was it a while before you first saw snow?
Well, I was actually 6 years old. Funny that you mentioned that. Uh-huh. So I have an interesting story. So although my parents came from Cuba, I have cousins in Michigan. So Felix, my father's cousin, is also a Cuban immigrant, but like with the way things were back in the day, you couldn't control where, you know, there's this particular program, like they would have to come to the United States without the parents for a while. So they'd live in foster cares and they'd be, you know, there were different programs essentially. So Felix, my father's cousin, ended up in Michigan, stayed in Michigan, married a woman from Michigan, Nancy, who I love very much and watched me grow.
Okay.
And so I have Michigan cousins, essentially. So I have cousins in the Midwest. So I went to see them with my mom and dad, and I have a beautiful memory of snow, and we went skiing for the first time. I went to a place called Sugarloaf Mountain. I watched the movie Home Alone in their house. I was scared of the man with the shovel. I remember all those things.
Wow. So, great memories, really. Well, I want to play Florida Girl for everyone right now.
Yeah.
It's streaming everywhere. You can find it. And the video is pretty cool, too. So you have your own YouTube page, and I should mention we can find you on YouTube.
It's Anna Christina Cash.
Anna Christina Cash. Some great videos there. And so let's play Florida Girl now that we've talked a little bit about it. And here it is. Anna Christina, our guest, Anna Christina Cash, here on the Songwriter Connection.
When I was a girl, I used to play in the orange groves. My feet in the dirt, no cares in this world, that's how I rolled. And when things were rough, little Annie got tough. Wish I could give her a hug, tell her that she was enough. About 17, lost sight of me, and I questioned everything, but it's all okay, 'cause I'm still that Florida girl. I've made mistakes, but I'm not ashamed. I look forward to brighter days. No one can change my sunshine state. I'm still that Florida girl. Grandma, where are you? I wish I could hear your voice again. I saved 25 cents, other ice cream trucks in heaven.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to The Songwriter Connection with Dave Linehan. Find us on Facebook and YouTube at The Songwriter Connection Podcast. And find Dave at thedaveconnection.com. Watch now us. Back to the show with your host, Dave Linehan.
Sorry to jump on you there, Kate. Just want to let you know there's lots on thedaveconnection.com. There's links to my music, my new videos, also the radio show on Clay County Country in Illinois, and links to this podcast as well. So I hope you'll check it out. And I hope you'll also check out our Spotify playlist. Every Wednesday when we publish, I take some of the songs from the artists that we've been talking to and songwriters and put them up there for you to listen to. And you can just stream them, put it on shuffle. You'll love it. There's some great songs there. There really is. Also, if you're listening on YouTube, please like and subscribe. It helps us more than you will ever know. Please
see
do.
If I still feel
I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real.
That is our guest today, Anna Christina Cash, from a recent performance at the Grand Ole Opry. The Opry, by the way, is celebrating 100 years this year. And in June, they did a tribute to Johnny in June. And you were a part of that, weren't you?
Yes, it was an incredible show. John and I have actually performed four.
John was playing guitar on the song, right?
John's playing guitar. Also on that song, we have our friend Chris Perez, who is in Selena y Los Dinos. I don't know if you're familiar with the Tejano singer Selena that passed away when she was 23. She was killed. Yeah. Chris was her husband.
He
also has the Chris Perez band. He's in Grupo Metal. But Chris is a dear friend of ours, and he played on that show, and he played with John and I, Jackson, Hurt, and Ring of Fire.
Wow. You know, I love how you interpreted Hurt. You really did a wonderful job with that. Is that a song that maybe you would think about, you know, translating to Spanglish maybe and recording it on your own?
You know, that's so interesting. I have not thought about that. That's a great idea. Your idea.
You should do that because you just nail that song. I'm telling you.
That actually could be easily translated to Spanish. That's not a hard one. We could do that.
Huh. Wow. Well, there you go. I've always loved that song. It's written by Trent Reznor from Akron, Ohio, the Nine Inch Nails version. And Johnny just took that to a whole new place. And I think, and I've maintained, and nobody's been ever to argue this point, it was the greatest swan song, I think, in music history. I mean, it was like his last big thing. And when I first saw the video, I just about broke down and cried, you know, with June in there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You could just see and feel the emotion in that song. And you recaptured it there on the Grand Ole Opry. Man, crazy. It's good.
Thank you. It was an honor. Honestly, I wanted to do it justice. He deserved that. He released that song. I'm not sure about recorded, but he released that song after June had passed. And the video is just so heartbreaking. And to see that through the eyes of an older man, very different from Trent Reznor's version of Nine Inch Nails, which is cool and super awesome too. But to see all this through the eyes of an older man who had lived the majority of his life is heartbreaking,
And to see June in that, you know, coming down the stairway. And what I loved about his interpretation too, you know, Trent had this this dissident note that he put in there, throughout the song, and they didn't have that on Johnny's version because I don't think it would have fit, you know, but it was just so pure Johnny, and I loved it. Rick Rubin, you've got to salute that guy who helped to produce what I think really is among his best work ever.
I think so, and honestly, that's a very astute observation because not a lot of people notice that's something that makes the versions different, the dissonant chord.
It does. It really does. So you've got new music coming out and you've got some I want to play more of your music. Like I first became aware of you from your publicist. She sent me Cheap Margaritas. And I thought, wow, what a cool song. And you can, you know, we talk about that Hispanic beat, you know, mixed in with your pop and jazz and country influences. Yeah. It's all in this song, isn't it?
It is. And it's, you know, what's funny is that Cheap Margaritas is the one song I did not write on this record. I did hear it, you know, after I'd written nearly everything on the record, Willie was like, hey, I think you're, you know, if you are missing a song on this record, if you need more, give this one a listen. I think it would fit really well with the stuff you're doing. And lately I'm just so used to writing or co-writing my stuff, but I heard it and I'm like, I don't have anything like this. It's so playful. Mm-hmm. It's so like fun and tongue in cheek. I really don't have anything that's just light like this, you know, that has that influence. And then Erica Ender, who was one of the original writers on it, she did the Spanish translation and she wrote a big monstrous hit song that just hit big globally called Despacito. I don't know if you're familiar with
Despacito.
That.
Despacito, yes, absolutely.
Despacito, na 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 na. So she's one of the songwriters on that.
How about that?
And
and has become a great friend. And all of them, like, it's Frank Ray. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's also a Latin country artist. Frank Ray is wonderful. Willie Breeding, Jessica Kane, and Erica Ender wrote Cheek of Margaritas.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, let's play it. Let's give it a little spin here on the Songwriter Connection. And Christina Cash, our guest on the Songwriter Connection.
We know that to the both of us, this two for one's a little more than catching up. We know exactly what it is. It's a salty sort of truth that's always on our lips. It's our little happy hour tradition, with one hell of a hangover. It's the best kind of bad decision that we would never make when we're sober. You know we're like the cheap margaritas we're drinking. We're only gonna wake up saying, what was I thinking? We're drunk on the delicious bittersweet kind of feeling, the type of thing you say for a night. One taste and it goes straight to my head. You're the reason why the moment feels right, and I'm the reason why you end up in bed. You know we're like the cheap margaritas we're drinking. We're only gonna wake up saying, what was I thinking? We're drunk on the delicious bittersweet kind of feeling, the type of thing you say.
Yeah, Cheap Margaritas, it got a lot of online life. It that went viral.
Yeah, in on the video version, if you watch that, there's like a little epilogue at the end, right? And it's, you're talking to the bartender.
Yeah, sure.
And the bartender's John, right?
The bartender is John. In fact, you know, I have not posted that part to my socials. I probably should.
Oh, you should. Yeah. After this first one, you're going to like these a lot more. You know, I was right. It's funny how margaritas get better the more you have them, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
As an artist, isn't it tough choosing music that that you haven't written? How does that process work? Or does a song, like you just said, just hit you and you figure, well, that's just me. You know, I want to record that one.
Well, when that was presented to me by Willie, for example, like that just came very naturally. And he was right. It did blend well with all the other stuff because you want to create a cohesive project. I'm doing an EP1, an EP2, and eventually a full album project. So you want things that sound cohesive as if they're telling a story. And we thought it went really well with like Daybreak and, you know, other things that I'm releasing as well, even Florida Girl.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, it's very rare that I seek something out like that, because even La Llorona, which is an old classic folkloric song that I'm releasing, that's being released. It is old, but it's public domain. So when I wrote the English lyrics, I own my version of the song, essentially the publishing, because it's so old, it's over 100 years old, essentially. Wow. So once I started writing to it, it just became my version, you know, so it depends. But sometimes I get inspired to write things, to record things that I didn't write. Like I did a version of Patria y Vida, a song in Spanish about Cuba, that was released originally by Yotuel and Gente de Zona and all these Cuban artists.
Was that the one that was banned in Cuba?
It was banned in Cuba, yes. And I very likely cannot visit Cuba because of my recording.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Maybe I could, but I don't want to take a chance.
Right. Had you visited there? So, did you ever get to go back and visit? I never have.
It's very complicated. It'd be so interesting to really get to know where my family's from. So in so many ways, I would love to. But what people don't realize is that it supports the regime. You know, like those dollars don't go to the people. They support the regime. And it's a really hard thing to explain to someone, essentially. But, it's one of the largest human rights crises in history, and it is actually the world's longest dictatorship.
Wow. Let's go back to Daybreak and talk about that song. It's got a feel, I don't know, kind of like a little Big Town kind of influence, but that beat, that beat's been around, but you made it your own. Uh-huh.
Most definitely. So, interestingly enough, before I went to go write with Willie and another writer friend of ours, Gabriella Scotto, Jimmy Buffett had just passed away.
Oh, yeah.
So his songs were all over the radio. I was watching a lot of media and Jimmy Buffett. So, for some reason, that spirit kind of wasn't on my mind at the time before I entered the writing session. So when we went to Willie's studio in East Nashville, I thought, I'm like, I want something really light, something that has to do with the beach. So he started coming up with the groove on the guitar, and I came up with the word Daybreak, and then we're just writing back and forth, and the song wrote itself, essentially. And I wanted a fun summer song, and that's what it became. It was a really fun follow-up to Cheap Margaritas during the summer. I had two summer songs that back-to-back this year. And
you can't have enough summer songs, I don't think.
Yes. I mean, it's so much of it, you know, when I went into writing this record, into recording this project, I told Willie and John, I'm like, I don't want anything that's too heavy for this project. And yes, like there are things that are introspective for sure that make you think, but I didn't want it to be too heavy on that side of things. Because when I started, like my first Latin record, although beautiful, it was ballads. A lot of the ballads were more adult than my age at the time. So I, you know, am used to being a ballad singer, singing some heavy subject matter, you know, that goes with it sometimes. And as beautiful as that is, I did want to deviate a little bit from that on this record. And I wanted to, you know, after coming off of COVID as well, and that whole experience, and the world feeling so heavy, and just watching everything around me, I'm like, I just want to alleviate any sadness that people have. I just want things to be light. Mm-hmm. I don't want people to overthink. So, I really wanted to spread a message of joy mostly.
Wow. Very good. I think you accomplished that. I really do. I still, to this day, can't believe that we've lived through an epidemic in our lives.
Pandemic. It was terrible.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
A global pandemic. And I just remember the fear. And I don't think any of us wanted to feel that way. I mean, we were all so afraid. And I to just put gloves on it. And when an Amazon package came in and spray it.
Yeah.
Top to bottom. You know, that's not normal behavior. And
we never needed a daybreak more than right then.
Exactly. Well, so that's
Let's spin that. Anna Christina Cash, our guest on the Songwriter Connection podcast.
Take it slow like a southern draw. I think we need a day. Just a couple beach bums, tequila and some rum. What day is it? We're losing track.
With Anna Christina Cash on the Songwriter Connection podcast. That's the song Daybreak that's streaming out there everywhere. What's next for you, Anna? And you know, I keep calling you Anna Christina. What do people, did people just call you Anna?
Well, Anna's just fine, honestly. And Anna Christina is a mouthful, so yeah. No problem
so
to call
Anna's
me
okay?
Anna.
Okay.
Yeah, Anna's fine.
I should have asked you earlier in the interview, probably, but that's me.
You know? No, that's fine. Professionally, I'm Anna Christina Cash, but interview setting, friends, everyone just calls me Anna. It's a lot easier.
Great. Well, thank you, Anna. I appreciate that. First, let's find out where we can find you. You've got your own website. Tell me everywhere you are so people can follow you.
Absolutely. So I do have a website. It's AnnaChristinaCash.com. Mm-hmm. And on TikTok, I am Anna Christina Cash Music. But on everything else, like Instagram, X, Threads, I am just Anna Christina Cash. I will point out that the Latin spelling of my name is interesting. It's just one N in Anna and no H in Christina.
No H in Christina. Okay.
Yep.
I would have got that wrong. I didn't notice that. Anna, I did. Ah, there it is. I see it right now in writing. Christina Cash. Good. Check it out, folks. Do it. Check out the videos. They're really well done. Who did your videos? Same people?
Interestingly enough, Joseph Cash, my older stepson, John's oldest son, he's such a talented director and videographer. So he's great. He shot the visualizer for Daybreak. He shot Cheap Margaritas for Florida Girl as well. Now, in Texas, I worked with Brian Ramirez for the Llorona, because we were out there already working with Chris Perez. And Chris Perez, who I mentioned was in Selena and Lucino's Chris Perez band that played with us on the Opry for the Opry 100 special for Johnny and June, he is featured as a collaboration on the track playing guitar for La Llorona. So that was, I deviated from Nashville a little bit and shot that in Texas because we were already out there. And Brian Ramirez did a great job on that.
Fantastic. Well, they're awesome and they're well done and so professional. I want folks to check them out.
Thank you.
Because they will definitely enjoy it. Now, you've got a new song out that came out end of October. And this is a Spanish song, huh? This new song.
It is. It's 60% Spanish, but I wrote English lyrics to it. And, it is actually a very, it's an old folklore about a woman called La Llorona, which means the crying lady. So the backstory goes that, her husband or lover left her for another woman. So essentially she did not stop
crying until she created a river of tears and her children drown in the river.
Oh, tragedy.
It's super tragic. So I do explain for an American English-speaking audience some of what those lyrics are by doing that English translation. So it's a hybrid of English and Spanish, but about 60% Spanish. And very different. The video is very different from Florida Girl. This is very dark, sort of gothic, emo looking a little bit. So,
But before we go, what you got coming up here in the fall in 2026? You're going to release the album, right?
So the EP is coming out in January, and I plan on releasing Christmas tunes, even though I do have a Christmas record out that I released in 2018. So I'm releasing Christmas. The Great. EP comes out. I will be working in the studio on EP 2. I've got to write several Spanish translations to English songs I already have recorded for EP 2.
Oh, wow.
And definitely there are more shows. I'm performing today in Nashville on October the 9th. I'm performing at an event for CMA and Hispanic Entertainment Alliance at the CMA offices on October 30th.
Mm-hmm.
We are performing a show in Montego Bay the week of October 8th. And there's just so much coming down the pipeline.
Yes. Great. Exactly. It's good to be busy, right?
It is. Yes.
Great.
I love it.
Well, I know you're very busy, and I want to thank you again for making the time to chat with us today. It's just been incredible to speak with you, and I wish you continued success. Yes.
Well, thank you for doing so much research and for taking the time for a great interview. I really appreciate you.
We hope you enjoyed this intimate glimpse into the world of songwriting and found inspiration in the stories shared by our talented guests. Remember, the magic of music lies not only in the notes and chords, but in the emotions and experiences woven into every lyric. Until next time, keep listening, keep creating, and keep the melodies alive.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.